Are you from the South? Have you been looking for a podcast about our way of life, our culture, our food, our hospitality, and our food? Well, you found it.
This is Flavor Down South,
one of the most unique podcasts on the web, one that'll influence, entertain, educate, and cover the hospitality industry and the culture. We'll talk about Southern history and news. And if I could interrupt, we will be talking about the food, right? We'll have on culinary pros and hospitality underdogs, along with industry pioneers. Let's do it, baby.
This is Flavor Down South. Now your host, Rudy DeFoodie.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to Flavor Down South Podcast. I am your host, Rudy the Foodie Rayfield Jr. I have to put the Jr. in there. So we back. Got a special episode. It's festival season, and you know, we want to talk about the upcoming festival, French Quarter Fest. But to do that, before we do that, we're going to talk about a little bit about what the podcast is about again. Flavor Down South is a powerful, unique podcast that influences, entertains, and educates, conveys hospitality industry culture, history, and news that connects and unites people down south. I say down south, that's 10 states. I'll run them down a little later, but we got 10 states that we're covering. The goal is to expand an engaging relationship with an audience who enjoys culinary and hospitality underdogs. The stories that food and beverage, the conversations, the news, while celebrating the talents and strength that powers our communities. So if you're someone who enjoys food and learning about down south food culture, you have finally landed on the right podcast. But before that, we want to shout out our sponsor, Dave & Buster's out of Houston, Texas, is our season one sponsor. They're located at 7620 Katy Freeway. We can all agree that Dave & Buster's is where you can eat, drink, play, and watch sports. So check us real soon for the late night happy hour. Discounts coming soon. Now let's get this thing started. The title of this episode is called Back in Stride Again. You remember that song by Frankie Beverly Mays? Back in stride again. So this particular guest serves as the president and CEO of Vercasson Sausage, located in New Orleans, Louisiana. We're live in his restaurant right now, 1800 St. Bernard. Is it Avenue or Street?
Avenue.
Avenue. All right. So this is a black restaurant accelerator. This guest is very, very dear to me. He's a family man, preservationist, Seven Ward historian. He can tell you about your last name. And he is the king of sausage. So let us welcome Mr. Vance Vercasson to the Flavor Down South podcast. Welcome, Vance.
Thank y'all very much. Thank y'all very much. I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
Man, you got a radio voice, man.
Hey, man, you got to be ready to communicate when you can. You use what you got.
Might have me a co-host.
Oh, don't throw it out there. You might come back.
Well, look, man. Look, nearly two decades, right? Nearly two decades?
Since Katrina, trying to come back and put our roots back in the neighborhood and serve our community.
And so now you're back in stride again. What does that mean?
What that means is, you know, when most people, when you look at history, you look at situations and families, you'll have a great catastrophe or something that happens that makes you have to recalibrate and figure out how you're going to keep going. And for us, it was a couple of things, parents' death, Katrina, family sickness, and you have to stay motivated and you have to stay persistent, because for us, or for me per se, you know, being a third generation business owner, when you look at the multi-generational business model within the African American community, you see that it's just really a rarity. And to have it where the challenge of each generation to keep moving forward and taking the mission that was established and to find a current relevancy for it so that it can keep going is a challenge. And that was what it was for me, where you had my grandfather, Robert Levinsky Volkerson, who was a butcher by trade, and he started making the sausages and had meat markets in the community servicing it. Then my dad, in that model, that multi-generational model, where the second generation then takes what is started and then takes it to the next level. And usually that's where you find the success. And my father, Robert Sonny Volkerson, really had an entrepreneurial spirit, opened a restaurant in the French Quarter, which is known to be the first Black-owned business post-Reconstruction on Bourbon Street. He opened it in the 60s. And then that was Volkerson's Cafe Creole. Had about 10 years of existence, and then we moved on when the quarter started changing. But then he opened up he wanted to open up a sausage processing facility. He did a lot of other entrepreneurial ventures and really took us to the next level, and then challenged his sons to see who would want to take on the mission mm-hmm. to keep things going. And my older two brothers went off into other pursuits, and I just I decided to take the challenge. And of course, he died 7 years after I came back from college and joined him. And then I had to keep things going from there. And then Katrina hit. And then we had to think about trying to come back and keep things going. And my our office manager and cousin, who was my partner at that point, to really try to bring us back, she made decisions and she committed suicide. And so it kind of caused us to start over. Everything was just about starting over from where those particular catastrophes happened. But I just, for some reason, and trust me, I thought about it. I thought about letting it die, letting it move on, go and do some different things. But even my mother said, you know, with Katrina, you have an opportunity to walk away if it's not what you want to do. Yes. Because she knew it was very hard on my dad. It was hard on our family to do this business model. But it's all I knew. I grew up in it. It was something that just, you know, as Chris Rock said, you know, it just kept calling me. And so I just took it, you know, and looked at it. And I had I'm going to give a shout out to a guy I was in school with. He was a little older than me. He was a business star at Morehouse College. His name was Richard Pringle. Richard Pringle went off to corporate America. And then when I was a senior, he came back and spoke to us. He left when I was a freshman. Came back and he said, you know, I see the ceilings in corporate America for Blacks. And he said, if I had a family-owned business that I could take my talents and invest in, he said, that would have been the greatest thing. He admired multi-generational businesses and the opportunities that presented it. And so I looked at that and I respected him, and kind of a light bulb went off. And so at one point, my dad came back and said, look, I'd like you to come back and join the business. And so I took it as an opportunity to, one, spend time with my dad, because when I was younger, he was never home, always working, always following his business pursuits. So I saw it as an opportunity to work with him. And when you have these multi-generational businesses, to work and learn and really apprentice with that second generation moving into the third, it gave me a wonderful opportunity. Now, if we didn't fight every day, it wasn't a productive day,
right?
Because it was his ways versus some of the new theories I brought in. So it was a matter of that. But that was what kind of iron sharpened iron. You know, yep. You had to go against each other to kind of figure this thing out.
Yep.
And then when he passed on me, we had built something that we were very proud of, having full saturation in the local grocery store market. We were very competitive within the institutional bidding market in the city. And for him to die just kind of took the air out of me.
Yeah. So how are you feeling today? So like for real? Like,
yeah.
The new building is up. It's a beautiful facility. We're in here now. We had a chance to eat yesterday. The food was amazing. The service, the customer service, the experience was amazing. Everybody was greeted as we walked in. How do you feel today knowing that, okay, now we're back. We can settle in and we can start getting, you know, the customers back in here. How does that make you feel?
Well, I feel great. You know, in trying to find out in this particular decision to what relevant business model would, could we reinvest in? And you know, resources were few and far between. I just didn't quit. I just kept asking for help, looking for resources. And we were able to put together this package to redo this building. It was falling down and we owned the building, but it was falling down on this major thoroughfare. And I never did like the fact of how it looked and just didn't have a, at the time, a way to, you know, make it look better. But when we did and we were able to rebuild this building and put it back in its original form, it was built in 1924 by an Italian grocery family, the Giangrosso family. And they had their grocery on the bottom and they had they lived up top. So we put it back in its original model, but with a twist. We knew that after post Katrina, this particular area of the 7th Ward was becoming highly gentrified.
Right.
The opportunities for people to live in a place that they lived for generations with their family, they couldn't afford to.
Yeah.
So we carved out two permanently affordable apartments, a 2-bedroom and a 1-bedroom in this building, so that we can give back to the community also by providing affordable housing to two families. So,
And what's the square footage in total?
Our total building is about, I'd say about 3,700.
And what's the cafe seat? What's the seating?
Cafe standing capacity is 55 people. Seating, we have about 25 to 28.
That nice. I'm gonna tell you, man. We as soon as I walked in the building yesterday, my partner and I, we had lunch. But I can feel the energy. I can feel the commitment, the perseverance that it took to get to this point. Let me ask you this: you said 3 generations, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did it mean to come back to the 7th Ward though? Because I know the 7th Ward means a lot to you, right?
Right.
This area alone means a lot to you. But what did that mean, like? Because you took your time, you know, although you had some setbacks and some things you were trying to iron out in terms of partnering, you meant that you wanted it to be here. So how important was that for your family and your values for you to be in the community where you guys, you know, have been for so long?
Well, seeing what, you know, Hurricane Katrina did to the entire city,
right,
and kind of did a reset. I saw the changes. I saw that things were changing. And, we didn't have the same mix of people. We didn't have the same commercial mix of businesses. And our culture in New Orleans, the Creole culture, which has been misrepresented terribly over time and misunderstood, I wanted to come back and put roots back into our community. In whatever way it was going to come back, I wanted for our business to be an example of what was there and what it could be. And everyone that could come through our door, we wanted to put a social mission where you came in and we had the ability to give you 3 C's. We gave you cuisine, community, and culture. And those 3 gives us the ability to feed you, to bring back a sense of community that existed within this particular part of the city and different pockets of the city where people settled and had very distinct histories and family interactions.
Right.
And this was just a community. I mean, people knew each other. They knew their families. Yeah. They knew those surnames. And it was just a beautiful area that by necessity, got very close.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of traditional and cultural things that happened over time that were held very dear. And we just wanted to come back and make sure that we stayed as a representative of that
right.
history and culture and, right. and community.
Now, you mentioned Katrina, and I know we all still, you know, feel some elements of it in a certain way, whether it's memories, whether it's setbacks and things like that. You had to buckle down, right? You had to pivot. You waited your turn. You finally found your stride again. But again, we were faced with another disruption in COVID-19, right? The pandemic hit. Take me through your thoughts. Take me through your thoughts through that time. Like, what did you feel? Like, how emotionally, spiritually, what did that setback do?
Well, I'll tell you, that brought me to a breaking point. You know, we were already in building the building.
Right.
We were already in plans to come back. We were very heavily invested within the mobile vending with food festivals at the time. And it was pretty much what we had grown for ourselves participating in a lot of the festivals half of the year. It had gotten to the point. At one time, it was just 2 months, and then it goes all the way to almost the November, December. So we wanted to keep our brand out there and still take advantage of that. And then when that was eliminated, I mean, we suffered. I mean, yeah. we suffered, and we had all of our eggs in this basket, redeveloping this, didn't have much resources, and just kind of, you know, we had to do a lot of soul searching, a lot of, you know, gritting our teeth. And really, I just wanted to finish this. I knew it was going to come to an end at some point. I just didn't know how we were going to look when it did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
man, you got to have a good support system to get you something like that. Who's your support system? I met your lovely wife, Julie, and I know what intricate part does she play in all of this, man? And how special is she, has she been throughout all of this?
Well, you know, you go through a lot in a marriage.
Yeah.
You know, we going into 22 years soon, and, you know, it was ups and downs, a lot of different challenges. But, you know, I saw so much in her. I believed in her. She believed in me.
Right.
And, you know, she just continued to say, hey, let's do it. Let's try it. She kept really, you know, making me understand, hey, you know, we're gonna go through this. Let's keep trying when I was at my, you know, the lowest point. Mm-hmm. And then to get to this point, and then what I did was I said to her, I said, you know, we need to reinvest in you. You are a star in the making. I need you to build your brand separately from mine, because in any business, you know, if somebody goes down like my dad, who just had a massive heart attack and died, I mean, people knew who I was. They knew I was the son and I was going to take over and keep things going. But, you know, when you have someone as talented as my wife is, I had to invest in her. I said, look, you know, you may not see it for what I see, but you have a great personality, a great look, a great ability that we can use that and build that. And so she didn't see it at first, but I just kept pushing her out there. I said, you know, we want to do these cooking segments that's been offered to us. I want you to do them. I want you to be out there to do some of these interviews and be the face. And so since then, she's developed a confidence. She's seen what our vision looks like, and she's taken it to the next level. She's developed a condiment line. Nice.
We tried some of those mustards yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
We had eight different flavors.
Yeah, yeah.
Shout out to seven. Yeah. Shout out to Julie, man.
Julie, listen,
mm-hmm. before we go further, I want to go back.
Okay. Right?
Because I want to make sure we touch on this, because I read something that I thought was absolutely amazing, and what I have been seeing throughout my consulting journey in food and beverage and just helping families transition after whether a loved one passed away or they taking over the business. Your father was an entrepreneur, and he introduced you to the business early. What mm-hmm. I would like to say, 8 years old, you started hanging around.
Well, yeah, you know, in family businesses, you got that free child labor,
right?
You know, you just right. make you remind them, yeah, I'm not giving you no money. You
right,
just, you got a food to eat and a house to stay in. So,
right.
we were introduced to various aspects of it throughout the years, wow. Working at the retail. Meat market or in the sausage plant or at the festivals, you
right,
know, working
right.
that. So
so he passed away All mm-hmm. Saints Day.
All Saints
right?
Day.
1998. Right. It was then I read where you said that you realized that generational transference was your responsibility.
Yes.
Right. Now, with that being said, do your kids feel the same way? And do you ever discuss the importance of the family legacy with your kids?
You know, I when it happened, I had to kind of understand, you know, what options you have. You
right.
know, you look at other family businesses. I spoke with a number of established multi-generational businesses. I spoke with some of the Rhodes family that has a funeral home business here.
Right.
Spoke with the Chase family and what they were trying to do. And even looked at some other models of multi-generational families from other ethnic groups. And the thing is, you have to prepare for exposing that generation to the business, but not fully depending on them to take the mantle, because they may decide to do other things. You have to build the entity so that it becomes an asset. Mm-hmm. They can go off and do other things. teach them the knowledge of the business, right. But hopefully they may stay in and manage it and take it over. But if they don't, give them the options to say, hey, we have a manageable asset. We can maybe put it in someone's hands or partner with someone to maintain a presence moving forward. That's one that's acceptable for them for what they want to do with their lives. You don't ever want, you know, when I saw what my brothers and I went through, I had an older brother who wanted to be an opera singer. So he pursued that, but he always came back when he wasn't singing and worked in the business.
Okay.
Had another brother who just made his decision. He just didn't want to do it. And seeing that from my vantage point and seeing what my dad and my mom were going through, I said, you know what? I'm going to come back and invest in this. And whatever happens, happens. But I get to work with my dad. I get to learn. And then, you know, it showed me, you know, hey, I could do this. This is something that we can take to the next level. Now, having those catastrophes happen, it makes you question it, but it kind of also made you see, you know, the importance of doubling down.
Right.
And giving it a shot.
Right. That's great, man. Well, I'm happy to hear that, you know, after so much pivoting that you guys have kind of found your groove. And let me ask you this, just to kind of change it a little bit. What's your favorite thing to eat? I know we talk about New Orleans a lot in the culture of New Orleans, the Creole cooking, the cuisine, but what does Vance eat? Like, what's his favorite thing to eat?
You know, I've some of the classics that I grew up on, you know, of course you like a good gumbo, mm-hmm. The tradition of the red beans on Monday, you know, stuffed peppers, dressings yep. made with milliton or oysters. Also, you know, I've got to say, you know, the sausages, more so in terms of how they were used in all these dishes.
Right.
So
right.
it was good to see your protein used in the beans or used in the gumbo or used in the peppers. And so that's kind of where the sausage part comes. But then you also have where some other dishes that are mainstays, like pineed meat. For me, I love pineed meat. And for those that don't know, you know, pane means to bread. And I'll give a shout out because one of the things I try to do in teaching about culture is to make sure that people understand how inclusive the Creole culture is. Mm-hmm. And the Italians that immigrated to this city pretty much, you know, gave us that influence of breaded veal. So
right.
The pine meat is something that, even with the use of breading it with Italian seasoned breadcrumbs,
right.
is a nod to them.
Yeah, yeah. And so, real quick, we're going to take a break right after this question, but let me ask you this. The state of New Orleans, what I would like to say, cooking and the different type of cuisines that you see, how do you feel, you know, do you feel like we're kind of going off the beaten path when it comes to staying to the traditional, or do you feel that we've evolved? Because everybody thinks New Orleans, you know, people from here think we're the best cooks in the world, right? You know, you go somewhere else and you say, oh, it doesn't taste like New Orleans. So we are the standard when it comes to, I guess, cuisine in some sense. Do you like the menus that you see in the restaurants right now? Do you go out to eat, or how your ear to the streets like that in that way in the restaurant industry?
Yeah, I think that it's a challenge in saying, okay, we're a tourism city,
right?
So we have so many people that come in to visit. What's important is having the traditional to have access to,
yeah,
and then of course it's going to evolve and you're going to have chefs coming in and being influenced and trying different things and trying to create niches. And so, you know, when I was reading an article, you know, this the Vietnamese influence on crawfish, they call it like Cajun. And then you have some other types of Caribbean influences that have come in and kind of put their spin on it. And that's going to happen.
Right.
But you have to maintain examples of the traditional so that people can see from where those influences came from.
Right.
We're going to try to do that. I'm not trying to do any new fusion, new age, new creation. Mm-hmm. We may do some different types of products, but they will be rooted in a traditional sense.
All right, good. So hold that. We're going to take a quick break. please stay with us as we take a quick break and pay some bills.
You're listening to Flavor Down South. If it's Southern culture, we're talking about it. Now, back to your host, Rudy the Foodie.
Oh, that's right, because we filmed it.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome back to the show. We're live. We're live at Vance Verkerson Sausage, located in New Orleans, Louisiana. 1800 St. Bernard Avenue, heart of the 7th Ward, and in this part of the show. But first, let me thank our sponsor, Dave & Buster's, again, located at 7620 Katy Freeway in Houston, Texas. Dave & Buster's is a fun experience for any occasion. We also like to shout out the staff over here at Verkerson Sausage, the entire staff, the wonderful staff that treats people with an experience. We had a chance to get a little taste of that experience yesterday. I think I had the Creole burger. My partner had the jerk chicken sausage. So this part of the show, we're going to talk French Quarter Fest. It's festival season, right? But I want to also, you know, understand what your upcoming plans and expansion and menu additions, right? And any other fun things that you're going to, you know, be allowing guests to experience as they come in. But if you can take us through real quick, making sausage, right? What does that take? Like, what does that look like? Because a lot of people, when we go out to eat, we don't really know and understand what it takes to get that one plate to the table.
Mm-hmm.
All the different steps, all the different vendors, all the different negotiations that you go through to get that one plate to the table, right?
Right.
Talk us through in the fastest way you can, sausage making, and how does that look? How does it start?
Sausage making is, you know, goes back to, I mean, beginning of time. I mean, it's just where, and from the art of meat cutting, which is the new term, butchering is more of a historic term. You know, when you get your this entire animal and you got to break it down, the way you make your money is by using as much of it as possible. Sausage making is a byproduct of the trimming of a lot of those primal cuts, you know, the fat trims and everything like that. And so you just want
to. Sorry about that, man. These guys are trying to dress me on air.
Well, you know, because they look at you all the time, so they know what they expect.
Yeah, you know, I'm fat, though.
No, you're not. No. It's all about the verbiage. You're not fat. You're
big boned.
You're husky.
I'm husky.
Yeah, you know,
shop at JC Penney.
You know, you're rounded. You know, you gotta give them terms so that they can, you know, shoot. They put out so many things, but to get back to the sausage, it's a process, and it's where you take something. You know, we grind those trimmings up. We take and we put our seasonings in there. We self blend a lot of our sausages,
mm-hmm.
Especially the traditional ones, and then you mix that, and then you put that in a stuffer. We can either stuff it with hog casing or imitation casing, synthetics. And then on the end product, you have what most people see, and you link that up and you present that to them. And then what I find is a lot of people don't know how to cook that sausage.
Yeah.
You know? And so we educate them all the way to where they, to consumption. So yeah. It's amazing. People look at it. They may look at a hot dog,
sure,
and think they know that process. But like Bismarck said, he said, there's two things you don't want to get seen done. That's making laws and sausage making.
Oh, my God.
It's not the prettiest thing.
Not the prettiest, yeah.
But if you're not, that's if you're going from slaughter. Now, we don't go from slaughter. We go from prepackaged products and trimmings, and we take it from there. But we you know, I respect the process. And I want to say, I know a lot of sausage makers in the town. And, you know, some people have said sausage king and things like that. I don't really, you know, place that on myself, because I have such respect for some of these multi-generational sausage makers. And I want to give a shout out to Kevin Bashman, who's been doing his thing within our culture. You know, we've got a lot of other wonderful sausage makers in the city, but I'm going to throw out to him because we're the last two within the Creole culture that represent for this community. And you know, we're examples of taking that mantle and keeping it moving forward. But
shout out to Kevin.
Yeah. But again, it's really just making sure that when you're known within the misunderstood vantage point of the Creole culture, hey, we're the flag bearers, so we're going to continue to put this product out in a representative fashion. And even with some of the new products that we do, I look at what flavor profiles are coming out and what people are looking for. That's why we did the jerk chicken. You know, we made a crawfish sausage.
Yep.
You know, you got to give out basically what the trends that are going, and we want to put it out within the flavor
profile.
Yeah, you got
to create new customers. You can't, you know, different people have different, you know, likes and desires. So that's great that you... You know, you saw that opportunity to expand their menu in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, man, I know you're open for business now, but French Quarter Fest is right around the corner.
Oh,
And if it's the 40th year, mm-hmm. right? You're in the same spot as that right around the cathedral. What's that area called? Is that
Jackson Square? Jackson Square. If you're facing the cathedral on the left-hand side.
All right. So now, are we opening? Are you going to open the cafe while French Quarter Fest is going on? Are you going to stay closed and move your staff out there? I know it's a tough decision. You're moving your entire operation, but have you been thinking about that yet?
Yeah, we thought about it, and we came to realization this year. We just opened our cafe deli in November, end of November.
Yeah.
So we're not quite ready to manage those two, but our goal is for next year to be open during the festival. We're going to pull our crew out of here and bring them, expose them to the fest and utilize them as best as possible.
Drink plenty of water.
Bring plenty of water and a lot of stamina, because, you know, that's a long day. But it's an experience that, you know, no matter how tired you may get, I tell you what, it's the people.
Yeah,
it's our visitors. They come, they support. We get some wonderful questions and conversation. Right. And all we want to do is be an example, an ambassador, whatever label they want to give us. We just want to be a wonderful interface for these people that come to see us.
Sure.
And
sure.
Let them have an example of authentic residents. And hopefully we can impart some wonderful information.
Right. So tell me about that. Tell me what it's been like. Why you keep going back? What has been that experience for you at the French Quarter Fest? That, and I know it was part of your business model, I get that, but what does it do for you, your brand, your family, the people that you get to communicate with? Like, why is it so important for you, your company, to continue to participate with the French Quarter Fest?
Well, you know, when I was about 14 years old, and the first executive director, Sandra Dardis, approached us and said, would you like to be a part of a new festival? My dad grew up, his best friend growing up was Dutch Morio. He was the mayor at the time.
Yeah, Johnson
and Morio's. And Dutch was like, hey, man, it's going to be a great initiative, a great thing. You know, go ahead and get in it. So we wanted to participate. And it was, what they were doing, the initiative was they wanted to bring people back to the quarter. They saw, like I said, we left the quarter in the early, mid-70s because it had gotten a little seedy and it really started to change. And I think the city saw in the early 80s, look, we need to bring people back to the quarter, bring locals back to the quarter.
Right.
And so that first festival, you know, it wasn't that packed and it was just in Jackson Square. But we saw when you make this investment in our city. And for us, we needed to reach people. We wanted to do that point of sale where we knew if we can get, you know, and just take it for what it is, but I'm not trying to be funny, but if we could get our product in your mouth,
right,
we knew we got you.
That's right.
You know,
if I can put
it on your palate.
That's right.
You know, I could have said sausage, but I didn't. I said product.
Yeah.
If I could put my product in your mouth.
Right.
I got you.
You're going to taste the flavor.
It's going to be like they say, soul.
Yeah.
And once I get you to taste it, then I can talk to you. I could tell you, one of the things about our history is those old people that used to sell on the street, they used to bark when they come and hit that block, whether it was the ice man, whether it was the vegetable man, whether it was whoever was coming to service the people, they used to bark. They used to say, here we come, coming down the street, watermelon, cantaloupe, you know, or you had the ice man and people knew to come out their house and say, I need a block. Well, I take that tradition, and you come by the booth, I say, come get it, and it's good. It'll make your mouth feel happy, your tummy say yummy. It'll do for you what you want it to do. It's where the rubber meets the road, and the road meets the rubber. You can't wait. It's at the gate. Don't be late, because if you do, you're going to have to wait. So I say, come on,
classic,
baby, come get it. And and sometimes my wife had to correct me sometimes, because if I got a group of three or four women coming together, and I say, ladies, I take a little Cat Williams. I say, this sausage right here? The this sausage right here is the only sausage that never disappoints a woman. And they say, oh, I got to try it. And if I get a little bit of taste in their mouth, then they say, oh, can I get 2-3 sandwiches? Oh, see, man. That's the biscuit to get the barrel of flour. My daddy said, if you give them a biscuit, they're going to be so appreciative. They're going to come and say, here's a barrel of flour, make me more biscuits. Right. And I'm like this. I'm a people person. I want to interact with people, but I'm the best salesman for my product.
That's right. That's right.
And if I get you in front of you, I'm going to close you.
That's right.
I'm going to make
gonna
sure
land the plane.
We're going to land the plane. So it's really a great tradition to do it at the festival. And we're just thankful that the organizers at French Quarter Festival that allow us to participate.
So I got a chance to interview the first black food and beverage director, Kenneth Spears.
Yes. Shout out to Kenneth.
What a great person he is, and an advocate for all the vendors. He's doing his best to keep the festival in a position where they can support y'all on the back end, right? Just making sure y'all have the resources y'all need, electrical power, things like that. And how has the festival evolved, though, you think? I know it's a big festival. It's the Mint, you know, you got a Riverfront, you got Jackson, but how has it evolved over the years?
I tell you, you know, it was at one time just in Jackson Square.
Yeah.
But this organization saw what they had and they just kept building and building, and they saw they had to invest marketing dollars internationally throughout the country to get visitors to come in at that time. And I mean, now the footprint of the French Quarter Fest is throughout the entire French Quarter. It has grown so big. And the thing is that they were able to grow this festival to as big it is, big as it is, and kept it free.
Nice.
You can come and just walk in and enjoy the festival. And I tell you, it truly gives the locals the ability to come out, walk around, see their people, eat some good food, hear a lot of good traditional jazz music, a lot of traditional R&B, a lot of traditional folk music that is rooted in this city. And I tell you, the French Quarter Fest is really just an example of truly what our city represents. You come here, you take a little bit of this, you give a little bit of that to the culture, and it makes us this true melting pot, or as we should say, gumbo, that once you put your spoon in it, you'll never forget it.
Yeah, shout out to the French Quarter Fest. Shout out to all of the vendors. I think you got 67 this year.
67, I think so.
But anyway, shout out to the courage that it takes to go out there and put your product out there with all the elements of rain. And you never know what you're going to get. But I hope you have a successful festival. But we're going to get ready to close. But I got a few more questions. In my opinion, these are some important questions. You know, man, the state of the restaurant industry right now, particularly challenging around small businesses in New Orleans, right? Restaurant owners are having a hard time getting people in the doors. They just are. You know, whether we want to blame it on tourism, crime, whatever we want to blame it on, we really have to figure out a way to get people at least coming off the beaten path. What do you think some of the ways that your staff, you are trying to, what are some of the things you guys are trying to do to make sure we can get butts in the seats? That's one part. And then talk about some of the new menu items and new additions that you're going to add in the future to draw people in.
Well, it's a challenge. You know, I've entered into this new business model as a restaurateur, per se, in a fast casual segment. And it's a challenge. I mean, I'm learning as I go,
right,
you know, and
right.
The challenge is really you got a lot of other businesses that have popped up. You also have a lot of these mobile food vendors,
yeah,
with these trailers and trucks,
yep,
that's also a competition.
Yeah. And people cooking out their homes.
Yeah.
So,
and you also have with the delivery market, people have access to what they want and they don't have to come into your brick and mortar.
I agree.
So the challenge for a brick and mortar is how do we think outside the box to get people to come to your establishment? And we've got some great, great restaurateurs that have come about, young ones who are thinking out the box that I'm watching.
Yeah.
You know, shout out to Larry Morrow, doing with his Morrow Group.
Superstar.
Duke Chase, who's expanding his family brand and what they're doing. And so you have to look at what you're doing, do it well, and then see how you can grow specific to your brand and what you do. And that's what we're trying to do.
So one of the things I tell people when I go in and do any engagement is it's about repeat customers.
Mm-hmm.
So what I notice is the way that you guys welcome people, the way that you guys make people feel at home, to me, that's the best marketing tool that you could have is to make them feel at home. That's why I keep coming back. You know my name, you know what I like. And when I come, I can bring a guest. I know that they're going to be treated the same way. So I think that what I would like to see is the customer service experience improve in the city. What do you think about that?
You know, that's a challenge. I think that, you know, I give respect to Chick-fil-A.
Oh, Chick-fil-A,
and what they've been able to establish within the customer service market.
Yeah, but that's the Disney customer service model.
Yeah.
I studied it, right?
Yeah.
From the curb appeal, from when you drive up all the way to the condiments that you are given,
mm-hmm.
it's first class all the way. And they don't accept anything else.
No.
So the culture that they have built is, it's my pleasure,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So
and with that concept, which is, and you're right, the Disney model. You go to Disney, the price points are ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you dismiss it.
Yep.
For the experience.
For the experience.
You go to Chick-fil-A, they may have a higher price point.
Yep.
But you're going to dismiss it
right.
because you prefer that experience of customer service.
Exactly.
I want, when you come in here, to have an experience where you come in, we engage you, we talk to you. If you want to talk to us, ask us questions, we give you information. We make sure that when you leave our threshold, that you're thinking about telling somebody about the experience, thinking about when you're going to come back.
Yep.
And the beautiful thing is, since the short time we've been open, we have regulars.
Nice.
We have people that come and they're different demographics.
Yep.
We get Asian, white, old, young. And even when we're going to try to grow for us, our visitors, our tourists to come and experience this, because if we can get on that model mm-hmm. where you come in and you know to come by us to get that experience,
yep.
then I think we can survive over time because our greatest industry is tourism.
Yeah. So with that, what are some of the, I mean, I know you got daily specials that you're running. We got the po' boys that we can order. You going to apply for an alcohol permit, or you already have.
We're in the process of that.
What menu items can we look forward to in the future, and which ones we should come and check out right now?
Well, you know, we're going to, I never forget, Little Duke Chase told me, he said, look, man, do what you do. Don't go too far out of what you do. And so we're going to always do sausage. We're always going to do po' boys.
Yeah.
So we're going to keep po' boys and keep putting newer ones on, expanding what the offerings are, the toppings.
Nice.
We're also going to, we've evolved to doing weekly specials. And those particular plates are rooted in the indigenous cultural food ways. So we do, we make it stupid and simple. Meatloaf.
Yeah.
We do it well. We do pork chops, some other pork chops. Mm-hmm. We do some smother seven steaks and do those. Ooh, we want to have
life savers.
Seven
steak was a life saver.
You know, shrimp and grits, catfish and grits, catfish fried or grilled. Taking some of those proteins that we're known for in this area that we have access to from the waters and utilizing them. So we're not trying to, we're not trying to fix what's broke. We're just trying to just oil that wheel and make sure that we participate within a food genre and do it right.
Nice, man. So as we close, is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to maybe share with the audience, let people know?
Well, I want to say, you know, when you come to New Orleans and you want to venture into our city, make sure that you take a little time to understand the culture. Our umbrella culture in this city is Creole. Cajun is a subset of that Creole, that Cajun Creole experience. Those Acadian Creoles have given such a great subgenre of food that has been a part of this area. But you also got to look at the Sicilian Italian contribution. You got to look at the Irish contribution. Shout out to the Brennan family. You got to look at the Vietnamese and the Filipino food contribution to this, which is the Yakamine and some of the other Asian influences. All these different influences that we have in this city, you've got to look at this port being one of the busiest ports in the history of this world, and the people that have come through here, even the Haitians that have come and have contributed.
Yep.
You know, we want to make sure that they are represented and that there talked about, absolutely, and that people understand of their contributions to, absolutely, our foodways, absolutely, and to our culture and to our aesthetics and our facades on our neighborhoods. You know, this is an inclusive city historically,
yep,
with all of the challenges that we have today, with people misunderstanding and still trying to segment and not include people. When you come to New Orleans, the reason why people who come here for the first time, we have so many people that come here and they fall in love with the city and they move here, mm-hmm, and then they become indoctrinated. That's not by chance.
Right.
Maybe the only other place that's like that is New York.
Right.
But what's the commonality? The, right, port. The, yep, different cultures that have melded together.
Yep. Yep.
And you got people down here, people look at me and they say, man, what are you? I say, you got some time? Because, right, I'm a mixture of Black, yeah, African. Absolutely. I'm a mixture of French. I'm a mixture of East Indian. I'm a mixture of Spanish. I'm a mixture of Jewish. I'm a mixure of all of that. And I have it and I can find it in my history.
Yes.
That's what made us who we are. And they got so many people. Like, you look at the Laurent family. That's that French, that, mm-hmm, Afro-Creole. You look at the Eugene family. Mm-hmm. You got that Afro-Creole. You got that Native American. American.
Right.
We all mixed in here.
That's right.
When you talk to these people, you can hear that history. But the problem is, we've got a younger generation that's disconnected.
Yeah.
They don't know from where they came. And,
right,
part of what we do is be one place where you can come and we're going to engage in a conversation that hopefully gets you to instigate thought and say, you know what, let me do a little research. Let me find out all of this, or what my surname means, or what my mother's surname meant, or what my background means. And then when you do that exploration, you're going to find a rich history. You're going to find an understanding of your people and the proud heritage you come from. And hopefully that'll give you a place to catapult yourself in your life.
Right.
And then hopefully our cultures and traditions keep going on through your oral history that you pass down to your family,
right,
and your kids, and then the beauty of our culture maintains.
Amen. Amen. Well, did you have a favorite part of this episode?
Favorite part was looking in your handsome, husky,
oh,
face,
God,
baby. You know, ladies,
oh,
I know,
God,
he's taken, but I tell you, if you get one that looks like him, you ain't going to hit. And then they got two people behind these cameras, beautiful, handsome men. Boy, I got to tell you, New Orleans makes some pretty people. But I got to tell you, and they're rich with culture, they're smart. And I tell you, when you come down here, don't be afraid. You're going to fall in love with something.
Yeah.
It may be the food, it may be the culture, it may be a man or a woman. But guess what? You might be hard for you to leave. Because it's just a great place to be.
Well, man, listen, man, I want to personally thank you, you know, on this show for the years that we have been able to just have conversations. You watched my ability to evolve this whole movement of just telling stories by us for us.
Yes.
The Black journalist's voice in food is silent. There's an oppression in that space, in my opinion. And this is just another incubator of a way where we can create, you know, our own stories and tell our own stories through our lens and through our voice. So I want to thank you personally for, you know, you always saying yes when I call. So,
oh, yeah,
and your contributions to the industry and to this neighborhood and community. So as we close, we want to shout out a few people. We want to send a special shout out again to Julie Verkerson and her staff for the hospitality. If you have a chance, stop by the location, 1800 St. Bernard Avenue. Julie has some wonderful, wonderful homemade Creole mustards that she's created. She's developed with her and her recipe developer. We tried them all yesterday. They're amazing. Come support them. Come give them some love. They got a great staff. They got a great restaurant here. We also want to send a special shout out to my two producers, Cy Eugene and Varian Laurent. If you don't know these guys, follow them on Instagram. Just check them out. Varian Laurent has a great history in this city. He was the first Black artist for the French Quarter Fest. As we talk about the French Quarter Fest, Cy Eugene participates and he works in the film industry over the last 18 years. And those two guys have been a rock star for Flavor Down South. My advisor, Mark Belanger, who you went to high school with.
Yeah.
Beyond Bourbon Street podcast, for all the help that he's given me. He says hello. Rashawn Klein over at Dave & Buster's in Houston for their support and investment in Flavor Down South. My family and friends, and of course, God. We hope that you'll join us for future episodes. We continue to share untold stories. You got one more thing, man?
I got one more thing, and I'm going to help y'all close this out right. You know, make sure you go to VocusOnSausage.com. to see our online presence and order some stuff to ship. But I want to leave you with our jingle, because to make sure it stays in your memory, it goes like this. It goes, oh, we got that good sausage. Go get your buns. We'll put them together and have some fun.
Hey.
I'll bring that mayonnaise, that Creole mustard too. We'll eat that good sausage. Come get that Creole sausage.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have that good old sausage from Volcresson to you. 1800 St. Bernard.
Hey, man. Well, listen, I thank you again. We appreciate the support. We look forward to sharing more stories. I'm Rudy the Foodie. I'm your host of Flavor Down South. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Peace.
You've been listening to Flavor Down South. Rudy's been in the hospitality industry for over 25 years. And his passion is anything Southern that connects our people. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And share it with a friend. Pass it around. And find us on social media. See you next time on Flavor Down South.